All right. Ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, we have none other than David Hines from Steel Pulse. And we featured the new album. We played the first album and the second album. And David, could you let the listening audience know who you are, if they don't know, and where you're from?
This is David from Steel Pulse, and we're based out of England, and we're a renowned reggae band.
Definitely, most definitely renowned, David. And I've been following you since around 78, you know, and, you know, the first album, Handsworth Revolution, that was just, I mean, it just said something at that time. It was a well-needed album at that time to come out of England. Can you expound on that? What was the things that were happening around that time?
Well, you know, we are coming from generations, like we're actually the first generation of blacks born in Britain. You know, our generation is recognized as that. And as a result, we've been subjected to a lot of English laws that were never suitable for us as a minority in a country as the size of England, and, you know, being all European and everything else. And we were subjected to police harassment, unemployment at a very high level within the black communities, and also, you know, a decline in the educational system, with all that escalating, you know, from time to time. It just was only a matter of time before riots started to, you know, start happening all over England, especially in industrial communities where, you know, there was a lot of minorities. So Hands of Revolution was an album that was written some 3 years before the actual riot took place, and it was almost like a prediction as to what was to come.
Wow, that was 74, about 74 you wrote that was written, Hands
of Revolution. Well, we actually came out as a band in 75, and some 3 years later, the album Hands of Revolution was recorded and released, you know, actually 1978.
Now,
the first set of riots that took place in England happened in 1981.
Now, when was the Rock Against Racism, and what was that about?
Rock Against Racism was really a conglomerate, you know, of different kinds of bands that came together to fight the racism that was escalating throughout Britain. There were mainly punk rock bands, which was the in thing at the time, and at that time they had a lot of reggae acts that were supporting the punk rock acts.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like a joint effort to see, you know, both black and white bands performing on stage, and bringing together different masses of people that listen normally to different types of music under one umbrella, listening to, you know, just aiming for the same goal, which was to rock against racism, all the racism that was taking place. So that went on for quite a few years, you know, the rock against racism, and then after a while, I mean, it all faded out when, you know, the music style of the punks sort of lost its popularity.
It was really a political statement at first, though.
Oh, yes.
And unlike in America, where people just, you know, style and fashion, you know, they put on, it's not really the political thing. Even though they're making a statement, it still didn't have the intensity of that it was in England.
Well, England is that kind of a country. To be honest with you, it's a country that's generally passive, but once the people get stirred up, in a sense, it's always very important for the government to take note. I mean, case in point, the Iraq war that took place April of last year and still going on to this present time is a classic example of what I'm trying to say. I mean, the people in England generally opposed the war, and as a result, I mean, I don't know what's going on here, but the Prime Minister has been on very shaky ground ever since he went against the will of the people.
Same thing, David. Mr. Bush is having a big problem, and
I don't know. I mean, no disrespect, but, you know, no disrespect to America, but there's always a tendency where there's a big problem here, but I find that, you know, the amnesia tends to kick in within this country here, you know. No disrespect to the audience who are listening, but that's what I do find. You know, it seems to be a case of amnesia a lot of times, where 2 months down the line, everybody forget what went on 2 months ago.
Serious thing, man.
That's a serious problem that, you know, a lot of countries are tend to be suffering. But I notice in particularly in the United States here that there's a big amnesia problem here.
Well, you know what, people have a tendency. I think America, some Americans have this God complex thing. You know, that we are in control and we're in charge. And that's the furthest thing from the truth. You know, it's this God complex, a manifest destiny that we're supposed to rule. And, you know, I think that's a bunch of crap.
Well, put it this way. I think it's a natural progression with any nation that has, number one, appointed itself the policeman of the world.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I mean, when it comes to empires, we look at the Roman Empire, which was probably the last, along with the British Empire, one of the last of the real big empires, and it was the same thing, you know, where, you know, one has to succumb to the ways of the Romans. Hence the term, when you're in Rome, you're the Romans.
Yes.
And, you know, then it was the Greeks before that was the Persian Empire, before that was the Babylonian Empire, and as you know, the thousand dynasties Egypt and in Africa had. So, you know, I think there, you know, there comes a time now where, you know, America's been perceived as the most current empire there is, and unfortunately, along with empires also stems, you know, the counterpart of an empire is usually ignorance as well.
Basically, that's
and,
it.
Ignorance is to the fact that no one recognizes any other religion or culture outside the culture that happens to be the empire, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's has always been the ways of man. So I wouldn't necessarily blame America, just that it's America's turn that all this is happening to, is what I'm saying, because they are now recognized as, you know, the empire. Everybody wants to run for the American dream now, so, you know, it's just one of those things. Everybody.
That's well put. That's well put, David. That is well put. You know, very diplomatic too, as I might say. But you know, I want to tell you something that you probably don't remember, but I'm gonna remind you. Big Al's 1986. Joe Higgs, Ross Tesfer. Sidney Mills, the keyboardist in that right. band, who is now in your band.
Right.
Jerry Johnson, who was the sax man, who was in your band, and Kevin Batchelor.
Right.
I was there that night, David. I was on stage singing background vocals. I remember when Larry McDonald said, "And we have in the house David Hines from Steel Pulse." Do you remember that, my brother?
Where was this?
In Philadelphia, 1986.
What was the name of the club?
Big Al's.
Big Al.
see now I know you.
I remember Larry.
Yeah.
I remember one or two incidents, you know, but them all together for Philadelphia.
Let me give you this name should bring it back to you. Joe Higgs.
Oh yeah, Joe Higgs. Yes. That was the name of the place.
No, it was not the Big Al's place. Big Al's was the name. Joe Higgs was performing with Ross.
I know Joe Higgs, but I'm saying I could not remember the name of the place. That was definitely in Philadelphia. I saw Joe.
Higgs. Got the ticket. I still have a ticket from that place.
He performed, and I remember about Joe Higgs. He had a tambourine act, where he was shaking a tambourine.
That was my tambourine, brother.
Okay, man. I forgot the name of the place. That was the first and only time I ventured that place.
Oh, my God. And three members of that band that you saw became members of your
right.
band.
Sidney Mills did mention that, but I didn't know Jerry. I didn't recognize Jerry and
Kevin.
Kevin at the time.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, you are absolutely correct.
And I have the tape of that show, believe it or not.
And Joe's passed on since then.
Yes, man. Yes, and Larry just told me the other day. He says, "Man, you got rehearsals from there? I want the rehearsals, man, because I was taping everything at that time, man."
Yeah,
yeah, man. So you know, it's a history. Yeah. This is a history that I basically have been doing this for the last 30 years, David. It's like I'm born in Harlem. but reggae music, for me, what it's done for me, I just can't tell you the many things that it's done for me. So I feel that I, in turn, anything I can do to promote this music, I will do it. I have been a fan, a performer, worked at SOB's promotion with a brother who's in Japan right now, Daniel Babu. And then now I'm doing radio for the past 14 years. And this is a privilege to be able to talk to you, my brother, who I have seen. I remember back in 1982, 1980 at the Ritz, February 1980 at the Ritz. So we both go back a long way, brother.
Yeah, man.
And I'm an archivist, so there's things that you may even want to try to remember and say, well, damn, maybe Ross Charles might have a crew. And then I remember some of the brethren that have passed through Steel Pulse that I have became friends with, like Fonzo, and what was it, the brother's name? Here's a question. Basil Gabadon.
Yeah. Well,
now, there's another Basil Gabadon. An older, is that brother related to Basil Gabadon?
From where?
Okay, Jamaica. I'm looking into old stuff.
Well, to put it this way, Gabadon is not a popular name.
Mm-hmm.
So the likelihood that they are related could well be.
Ah, okay. Like you are related to David. I mean to and
Justin.
Justin and Horace.
Well, I only learned about probably 10, 12 years ago that Horace actually, because we know him as Horace Andy.
Right.
But I only learned a few years ago that Horace Andy's name is actually, his last name is actually Hines.
Right.
It would have to depend on what part of Jamaica, but as far as Justin Hines, he's from Steertown.
Okay.
Which is a few miles away from where my people originated from.
Okay.
So I paid him a visit about 12 years ago, about 93. In Jamaica, you know, we were hanging out doing an album at that time, and we went to Steertown, and he showed me the members of his family, and you know, the whole body composition
looked like him.
Similar
to
my family, you know. Just as far as it went, you know, we kept in touch for a little while, and then we sort of drifted.
Well, he mentioned that Horace Andy was part of I was talking to him about that, and he mentioned that to me. And also, 1984, the first time that I went to Jamaica to Sunsplash, I was on the plane, brother, and there was a woman who said that she was your aunt. And she says, yes, David is waiting for his hair to fall down now.
Because I do have aunts that come. Where was this?
Montego.
Were you flying from New York?
To Montego Bay, yeah.
Well, I did have an aunt that was going back and forth. Right?
Yeah, man. Well, I remember her telling me, she said, that's my nephew, David.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like this connection, man. And this album, I just want to tell you this, man. Wicked. Unbelievable, David. Really.
Thank you very much.
I don't know how long in the work that went into it, but I will tell you, it is a very, very put together well album, as far as I'm concerned. The production is beautiful, man.
Thank you very much.
And you're going to get some play here as long as I'm able to do it. Steel Pulse will always be playing on my show, my brother.
Thank you very much.
And when are you going to be at the... can you tell us what you're going to be doing as far as performing in the New York area?
When we actually arrive in New York, we'll be... I think Zerovine Plaza, I think we're performing at.
Irving Plaza. Yeah, Irving Plaza. And what do you know the date of that?
I think that's the 17th.
The 17th of September.
17th or 18th.
Okay, good enough. And I got to let the people know here, and Ross Sanctuary will be, I'll be letting them know that I'll be bigging up the show, and hopefully
the
I can.
18th. It's
yeah,
the 18th.
The 18th.
We fly to New York on the
17th. Ah, and you must hail up Sydney for me, man, because he definitely knows who I am. And you were in Amsterdam recently, and there's a woman by the name of Esther Selector, and she was hanging out with you, and she mentioned me to Sydney, and he said to hail me up. So I'm, you know, this thing is universal, man. You know, it's like the world is so much smaller now with the internet. David, I just want to say I really appreciate you calling. You want to say something to the listeners at WHRW, especially the youth?
Well, to the youth, I mean, we're in times where, you know, the system, the whole scheme of things, want to pull wools over your eyes. And, you know, the education system is not what it used to be. So, you know, like the man says, thank God for the internet, where one can go and seek the half that has never been told, or some of the half that has never been told.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's still information that the internet will not provide. But strive for originality, strive for truth, strive for strength, inner strength. And, you know, we also like to know that you keep your ears and your eyes wide open to, you know, new ideas and most important of all, love. And we're going to have to thank all you all at the particular station, WHRW. Am I correct? That's the name of the
station? And Binghamton, New York. You know, yeah. Unlike Birmingham, but it's Binghamton. You know, people have a problem saying Binghamton.
Binghamton.
Yes, sir.
You know, we're thanking you for all those listeners for the support that they've given the band over the years. And we're just going to love you for being you.
And one more thing, David. I will say that I was in your city about 1987, and I got to the Culture Shop in Birmingham, man.
Right.
Yeah, man.
The
one on Eastfield
Road.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man. Okay. I got there and met, and actually, I don't know if you remember this, but there was some posters that were coming over there around 87. It's a sister in New York, Sister Ima from Africa House. She had the Marcus Garvey, she had the Selassie, she had all these posters. And Brother Daniel and myself came over, and we went to the Third World and Radical Book Fair, and we brought the posters. We left them there, and unfortunately we didn't get the money we were supposed to get. But that was an experience. It was 6 intense days of being in England, and I wish we could talk longer, because I would like to talk to you about the interactions over there that I find different than here. It's like, say, Asian people interact much more than they do here. And when I say Asian, I mean Indian people.
Yeah, yeah.
Interact over in England much more than they do here, man. It's, America is not really the melting pot, as they say. It's very divisive. And one has to be here a while before they can check that out. You know, it's like, because I've... Well, anyway, I would go on and on, David, but I'm sure you have some other calls to make, and
I'm going to sound check to go to now, because I'm here getting ready to do the show with the Roxy.
So you're out on the West Coast.
West Coast, man.
Beautiful, my brother. And remember, don't forget to hail up Sydney for me, and I hope to see you in New York, David. And we're going to put on something from Steel Pulse here, and you know, another brother, Habte Selassie, are you in touch with him?
Yeah, now and again.
Yeah, not as much as you used to be.
Not as much. Like I said, everybody sort of moved on to different levels.
Yeah, I got all those old tapes, though, when you and him used to reason, man.
Okay.
Believe it or not. Anyway, we're going to say goodbye, Rastafari, and see you. No, we're not going to say goodbye. We're going to say Rastafari and one love and guidance and safe journey over there, and hope to see you when I see you.
Thank you, man.
All right. One love.
All right.